serving veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes. Our guest today, Al Skerritt, is pretty amazing. 97 years old, currently battling leukemia, but still in possession of the kind of handshake that leaves an impression, the kind of grip that indicates his hands have been pretty productive throughout his life. He still lives in the house he built. I didn't say the house he had built, but the house he built himself in Seattle decades ago. He spent 25 years with the fire department there, and here's one to remember the next time you have a chance to visit Walt Disney World in Florida. If you go inside Cinderella's castle and inspect the bottom of the shelves, you might just find his signature on some of his handiwork. He spent a year using his carpentry skills to try to put that legendary tourist destination together. That never would have happened if Al did not survive May 11th, 1945, and the kamikaze attack that claimed the lives of 390 men aboard the aircraft carrier USS Bunker Hill. When we left off, he shared what it meant to see sailors lined up and saluting when the heavily damaged ship crawled into Pearl Harbor. The Bunker Hill's next stop would be the Naval Shipyard in Bremerton, Washington, just miles from where his wife and young son were. His wife, Jean, still didn't know whether Al had survived that kamikaze attack.
My wife's cousin worked at Bremerton, and she heard about the ship coming in. And she called my wife, Jean, and told her that the ship was something after all these years. I still cry.
So, and of all the ports for your ship to come back into, they come back to your home port.
Most of the sailors on board ship came from the East Coast, and they were very disappointed. I know when we were in Bremerton, well, they gave them money, enough money to travel back east as far as New York. They gave me $3 to ride the ferry back home.
What was that moment like to look into Gene's eyes again?
That was pretty good. Oh, on my way home, I knew I had this son at home. I saw this rocking horse over there in a window, and I thought, I'm going to take that home. So I went and bought this rocking horse, and I put it underneath my arm, and I got on the Rainier Avenue bus that would take me to where Jean was living with her mother, and everybody in the bus was watching me. And so then I told them, I said, I bought this for my son. I said, I just wanted to bring something home to him. And everybody in the bus was, they thought that, they all clapped. It was really something. I was carrying that underneath my arm with a sailor hat on and all that, you know. And so it was quite a picture, I think.
Well, and did he even know who you were when you showed up? Was he looking at your photo on the nightstand all that time or something? I mean, because he hadn't really known you before you went overseas. What was it like when you gave him the rocking horse?
I know my wife and my mother-in-law, they thought it was pretty good. You know, I think he just jumped on the horse and rocked.
And I'm just thinking time-wise, were you still home here in Seattle when the Japanese surrendered?
I was at the Roosevelt Theater downtown, and we came out, and everybody, they were in the streets yelling, you know, the war's over, the war's over. And everybody out in the middle of the street, and it was really something to see that. I kind of wanted to see what it would be like to stay downtown, but here my cousin came by in a car, and he saw us, and he yelled at us, and so he said, come on, I'll give you a ride home. So I didn't get to stay downtown very long, but they were celebrating by jumping up and down, just like the pictures you've seen of New York and that.
Well, that was a long time ago, 72 years, and you guys went on to have two more children. You now have 6 grandchildren, but over those years, 70 plus years. How often during that time did you think back to your ship and the day it got hit and the events that transpired?
I was so busy with my job. Of course, if something was said about the war, my mind always went back and I had flashbacks of this and that. But I got the most wonderful job in the fire department. I run what they call an aid car, and I was at the beginning of the medic program. And on this aid car, there was 4 aid cars in the city, and we took care of everything from Ballard to West Seattle. I was really a good aid car man. I'd go to get calls, everything from suicide calls to heart attacks. But all we had was just a car. And if we needed an ambulance, well, I had a two-way radio, and I'd call the radio operator and tell him to send an ambulance out. I was feel like I was a pioneer of the medic program. And I rode that aid car for 18 years. And the captain called me one day, and he says, Al, he says, I'm going to send you up to the Harborview Hospital, and they're going to train you to be a what they call a medic. And I told him, I said, I don't want that job. I says, I've been on this aid car for 18 years, and I just want something else. And he says, well, there's a John Riss. He just retired. Maybe you'd like to have his job driving the tiller in the back of the fire truck. And I said, yes. And so they gave me that job, and it was one of the easiest jobs in the fire department. All you had to do is follow.
Well, it strikes me that in all those years, as you know, running that aid car, you probably had a hand in saving a lot of lives, a lot of people who were alive because of your efforts and the efforts of your fellow firemen. But did you ever, in all those years, think back to that guy you'd pulled out of the engine room on the Bunker Hill and wonder what happened to him?
Of course I thought about that, but it would only be a moment thought. It was really surprising when I got that phone call here at the house.
So about a decade ago, you talked to a writer, Max Kennedy, son of Robert F. Kennedy, who was writing a book about the Bunker Hill and that tragedy. So your story's in that book.
Yes.
And unbeknownst to you, there's a gentleman in Chicago reading that book.
Yeah, well, he called me and he told me that I was the guy that pulled him out of the hole. He says he didn't know. He always wondered who I was until he, and I don't know what took him so long to read this book about that Maxwell Kennedy wrote. But it was surprising. And he said he was from Chicago. And that wasn't too long ago when he phoned me. But it was really something.
I know there's a couple parts of your story just in telling it here that have made you feel those emotions all over again. I imagine he said a few things to you when he called you that probably stirred some emotions in you. What did he say to you when he called out of the blue like that?
He just came right out and told me, he says, that guy in the book that you saved from the engine room was me. He says, it's so wonderful that you're still around and I could talk to you. And so then his wife even got on the telephone. Anyway, that was really quite a great moment. And I thought, well, that's a long time between him finding out that that was him. But I guess he never read the book or something.
I mean, of all the things that someone could tell you on the phone, I can't imagine something that would be a bigger surprise or more unexpected than that news that you got. How did it make you feel to know that not only that person survived, but that he's had this long life, and then he starts to tell you about that life that wouldn't have happened without you and your intervention? How did that make you feel to hear all of that?
That really answered my question of who was that guy. I felt good about it.
So you guys have talked on the phone, and I've seen a video where the author of the book, Maxwell Kennedy, came over and sat with you, and you guys did a little Skype session with this gentleman in Chicago, and you could see each other back and forth. But what about meeting in person? Are you guys trying to pull that off?
Well, we talked about that, but he's not well, and so we figured that we just had to stay home, and I'm thankful to know that the guy that I saved is up and about, and he's a little better health than I am. I feel real good that I know the guy that I saved. I really did save him. But I was young and I was strong and I wasn't emotional like I am now.
You know, I've talked to a lot of guys, hundreds and hundreds of vets who went through things similar to you. Some of them have shared that it's really bothered them over the years, that they see those situations again in their minds, or they wake up in the middle of the night and they're experiencing these flashbacks and all that. Has that happened to you? And if so, how have you handled it? How have you dealt with it?
Seeing that I have had such an interesting job of being a firefighter and I was in charge of the aid car, well, I had all those things to think about, too. If something was brought up about my ship, of course I'd have a flashback. But it didn't come on in a dream or anything. I had to have something that started me thinking about it again. But when I do think about it, I think about how lucky I am. And I do think about if a certain thing happens, so I do have different thoughts that come. They'll never go away. I think of them really clearer. I'm always thankful.
Have you been to the National World War II Memorial in the other Washington?
No, that's one thing that I felt like I didn't need to be reminded of all those things. And I've been offered several times for them to fly me back there, but I didn't need that. I remember things pretty good about on my ship and all that, and I don't need to be reminded of it going back there. And I do feel that is a real good memorial for all services.
Yeah, 400,000 Americans, 406,000 who died in World War II. And you knew some of them. You came close to being one of them. I don't want to forget to say thank you. Thank you for serving our country, and thank you for telling us your story. Is there something that you would say that you are most proud of or most thankful for?
I am thankful that I got to be a sailor instead of a soldier, although they did their part. And I do think about all the different friends of mine that got killed. I feel like even though I'm still here, I feel like I'm still on a mission. I don't know what my mission is, but maybe it's to tell my story. Maybe it was the beginning of the medic program. I feel like I had a lot to do with the medic program. I'm very thankful that. And then in my church, I had a lot of jobs in my church, Hillcrest Presbyterian Church. I was a deacon in my church. I felt like I did a good job there. I always like one picture that I have. It shows me sitting up on the cross arm of a church. I don't know who took this picture, but I crawled up there to see if I could paint the cross. Sitting up there looking around, and I thought, well, that's too dangerous. I can't paint this. I don't know why I thought of that. And so we hired a contractor to come in, and he had a hydraulic lift to paint that cross. But I got a picture in the back room of me sitting on the cross. I'm a man that always liked to do things and not just look at it, but do it.
Here's my last question for you, and if there's anything else you want to add, feel free. But since you're still on a mission, and you're a guy who likes to do things, is there anything you haven't done yet that's still on your list that you're hoping to pull off someday?
That's quite a question to answer. Maybe my mission is just to show gratitude and also to tell my story. I even think it's quite a story. Yeah.
And it may not be over yet. I know I said that was the last question, but here's one more. When you think about all those sailors on your ship that died in that attack, how should we remember them now? What's their legacy? What do we need to know about them or remember about them?
I think it would be good to show pictures of that time, to know and see how many, and to know about them, how they buried them at sea and all that. And I really feel like they should see some of those scenes where they bury them at sea.
You think by seeing scenes like that, we'll have a better understanding or appreciation of the price that was paid for our freedom?
Oh, definitely. And it shows that we gave them all a Christian burial. If you kind of see that sacrifice that they gave, you appreciate things more.
I think we all heard how much Al sincerely appreciates that sacrifice. And I'm sure you appreciate this 97-year-old as much as I do. As for Norm Lasman, the sailor from Chicago that Al pulled from the engine room 72 years ago, keep your ears open for his story on a future episode of Hometown Heroes. And link to that TV story of their connection and the book that made that connection, Danger's Hour by Max Kennedy, at hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes Facebook page. We're out of time for now. Thanks so much for listening. I'm Paul Leffler, hoping you'll always remember what Al Skerritt's unique story illustrated so sincerely again today. Freedom is not free.